Blog Talk Radio.
King Street, DC Metropolitan News and Real Estate Information.
Listening audience, great Wednesday, and welcome to the King Street Show. I'm your host, King, and I'm sitting here with my co-host, Mr. Smith. How you doing this morning or this afternoon, Mr. Smith?
Excellent. Doing well, King. Thanks for asking, man. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. And like, you know, we like to get every show started talking about our gratitude moments. I'm grateful this morning for this day for my life, my health, my ability to see, hear, talk, stand, have sound mind. I'm thankful for another 24 hours, another opportunity to pursue my purpose in life, and I'm also thankful for all the love and support from my friends and families. And with that being said, how about yourself, Mr. Smith? What are you grateful for this morning?
Hey, you know, King, I think I'm grateful for this platform, for this show, to be perfectly honest with you. There's so many people who have a desire to get involved in real estate, and there's just a lot of misinformation, and it seems to be something that's increasingly happening where you have to, you know, work through the landmines to find the people with good information that's factual, that's been well-researched and grounded, and people who are actually practicing what they're preaching. And so I'm thankful for this platform to be able to get people real information in real time to make real decisions for real estate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's funny that you say that, because I was just watching a video someone posted on YouTube yesterday. It was someone giving some real estate training services, and they basically were promising how they can help them purchase 5 properties through this in this pandemic. If they just take their course for $20,000, they can help them find 5 properties in the next 20 days. Now, my thing is, not even understanding, you know, the person didn't list what city the property is going to be located in, what type of properties they're going to be purchasing, or anything like that. They're just promoting that they can help them find 5 properties. So to your point, you know, real estate industry, particularly as it relates to real estate investing, is so unregulated that anybody can come out and tout the fact that they can help somebody make money and put a price on their so-called course or their coaching or their mentorship, any price they want. And if someone's out there who's willing to have that microwave mentality, whereas I just want to learn something quick, and the quicker you promise me I can make money, and the least amount of work I have to do, and the least amount of time I have to wait until I get that money, then that's the kind of course I'm looking for. So I think as long as those are always the triggers and people use greed and easy money as incentives, I think there will always be a market for folks looking for that until, you know, they get some kind of regulations in place. But to your point, this format, and I'm glad that you're able to be here as a co-host to help lay out some of your experience. You've been in real estate for at least of the past 20 years. You've had an opportunity to work on a variety of transactions, both commercial and residential, and you've been involved with several different investment type of transactions, one of which we're going to talk about today. I look forward to getting into tax sales with you.
Absolutely, King. Looking forward to talk through tax sales.
But before we get into the actual topic of today's show, I just wanted to get some of market conditions from you. What are you seeing in the marketplace I know you're a broker, so you're actively involved with the real estate transactions on a daily. I just wanted you to kind of share some market tips and news with our listening audience.
Yeah, so one of the things that's really happening now, it's in real time and it's a fluid situation, is lenders are starting to readjust the qualifications for loans. And so we're talking about particularly residential mortgages. So these are FHA mortgages, in some cases conventional mortgages, and even VA loans. But what we're finding is the scale is starting to slide a little bit. It's actually going up. So where we were at, 580s on average for an FHA loan, now we're seeing lenders are looking for over 640, in some cases 650. The second thing that we're seeing is reserves. And so we know that with an FHA loan, there's a minimum down payment. But we're also seeing that lenders are requesting higher reserves, meaning once you make your down payment and pay your closing costs, they want to see that you go into the property with a certain amount of reserves in the bank in the event that you might have an unforeseeable situation. So those are two things that we're seeing ramp up just in the last 10 days. And each lender is going to be different in terms of what their qualifications will be. But what we're seeing as an industry is credit scores need to be higher, reserves need to be higher, and they're scrutinizing their credit reports a little more than they were, let's say, 60 days ago.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's definitely some information that is definitely useful. And as our listening audience has to really begin to recalibrate their strategies, if you're a home buyer or you're working with home buyers, if you're an investor and you renovated properties and you're looking to market the properties to your home buyers, that's something you have to be mindful of, is that now credit scores have to be a little higher, reserves have to be there, so it's going to be a little more difficult. Now, do you anticipate that increasing or that kind of being the standard for the rest of the year? I know that's, a lot of things can change that, but just from your assessment of today's market based on what your the information that you have in front of you as of today.
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think it's going to depend on, what the next 60 to 90 days looks like, because as of right now, obviously they're just only taking into account the loans that are in front of them right now. But as people, you got to think about unemployment. We're in the state of Maryland. There was more unemployment applications filed in the last 7 days than was filed to that point in the last 12 months. And so you had, I think the number was something like 50,000 people, filed for unemployment. And so I think you're going to see as unemployment kind of shakes out, I think that story is going to tell what the lender's perspective is going to be on the health of the market and people's ability to borrow.
Understood. One other thing that I am curious about, are you seeing a change and maybe an increase in people wanting to become realtors and get into the real estate profession, or people not being so interested in the real estate profession? Just kind of what is this pandemic causing it, with people being, so many people being unemployed, so many people being at home? I'm curious to know if some folks looking at this as an opportunity to say, let me learn more about real estate, or some folks who are in real estate maybe currently reevaluating their career to say, maybe it's a time to get out of real estate. So what is the scuttlebutt you're hearing in that space?
Yeah, so I think it's a mix. We've gotten several calls of people who was like the first situation you described, of people who are considering that real estate might be a nice transition from what they're doing now, or even complement what they're doing now. And the challenge there is, because we're now in the COVID-19 and many states, including, state of Maryland where we sit today, there's restrictions on if you're not essential, if you should be conducting business or not. And so we're finding that although there is an interest in people considering real estate now, their access to classes has been limited. And we even have an online academy that we tend to work with and partner with and have sent agents there to be able to come licensed online. And now we're starting to learn that even the online classes are limited or non-existing because they have to be in compliance as well. So I think that's going to be something else, a nuance that will have to get worked out in terms of how people seek to get the training to be certified, to be able to qualify to get a license. I think what we saw, if we compare this to the 2008 market crash, is we saw an exodus of realtors from the industry. And so we saw, you know, somewhere around 35 to 40% in some cases in certain jurisdictions where people were looking for other ways to support their family other than real estate. So I think what you'll find is you'll find seasoned professionals, and then you'll find people who, you know, use real estate to supplement their income. And then you'll find people who are in real estate as a business. So if you're an investor, you might have a real estate investment business, right? You may be licensed, may not be licensed. So I think depending on where you fall in that spectrum, it's probably going to determine how you reevaluate if it's going to be something you continue or something that you will look to jump ship because of the market conditions. I will tell you, as the market starts to tighten, you know, it's, at one time, you know, every other person you meet had a real estate license, whether they were actually practicing or not. I think you're going to start to find the more seasoned professionals will start to rise to the top in markets like this, because they'll be able to use their experience and savviness and relationships to kind of weather the storm, whereas those who were kind of had it more as a convenience and not building a business around it will start to understand the fees and the different expenses that you have associated with your license. It's going to become very expensive to maintain the license if you're not actively doing the business.
Understood. Understood. So let's get started with the topic today's topic, I should say, which is tax sales. You know, and I know for me personally, I haven't really done any tax sale type properties. You know, I have my own investment strategies, but I've always been curious about it because I know some folks who've dabbled into tax sales primarily just to purchase properties and get that 18% interest that Baltimore City offers. So I just kind of wanted to have an in-depth discussion on tax sales and really kind of start from square one, you know, with just a really basic question of, you know, what causes a property to go into tax sale?
So it's a great question. So as you know, real property is assessed. In this case, you're talking about Baltimore City, but it's assessed by every jurisdiction throughout the country. And when that property is assessed, that's what sets the annual tax bill based on that assessment. And from that assessment, the city then, you know, annually sends out a bill to say, hey, this is your responsibility for paying your property taxes for this 12 months. And in the event that the homeowner does not pay the property taxes, at that point, then the jurisdiction will send out a final tax bill. And when that final tax bill is also goes out with a legal notice, because that's something else that people need to be aware of. This is a legal process as it relates to taxes. But that legal notice will go out and remind them of their responsibility. So to answer your question in short, a tax sale exists because there's a delinquency in terms of paying the previous tax year's debt has not been satisfied.
Okay. Now, when it comes to paying a tax bill, let's say, for example, there's a mortgage on the property and someone has a mortgage of $200,000 and they haven't paid their property taxes as well, and the state decides that they're going to take their property back through a tax sale. How does that work in the context of the note holder, the lien holder? So if they sell the property through a tax sale, is the person, the investor who purchases the property, expected to pay that existing mortgage balance, or how is that actually handled?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Taxes is one of the only liens that can be filed that can supersede a current lien, which is usually in first position. In this case, we're talking about a mortgage. So to walk you through this, once you go to settlement on a property, you sign the deed, there's a mortgage in place, so that mortgage holder, in this case, would go in what we call first position, meaning that if anything was to happen, they're usually the first one to get paid. So if you were to say, if you were to get like a home equity line or something like that, that may be attached to your property, those things would always go in second position, right? They would always go behind the existing mortgage. But interestingly enough about taxes is taxes can actually supersede any filed lien, including a mortgage. So what happens then if you were not to pay your tax bill and you got that final notice and then the jurisdiction said, okay, now your property would qualify for the tax sale, so your property is now going to the pool, then if that process completes the full cycle, then yes, it's a potential that that lender would now not be in first position, and therefore whomever purchases that property or purchases that certificate, and we'll talk about the difference between the certificate and the foreclosure and do you actually have ownership with the certificate, and we can talk about that process. But at the end of the day is, yes, there could be a scenario where that lender could be on the outside looking in, meaning that person who's bought that property at tax sale would not be responsible for that particular mortgage. However, there may be other liens, which is why I always recommend that people do their homework in getting involved in tax sales because, again, I said it is a legal process, is that there could be other liens that could remain on the property and that you would be responsible for if in fact you were looking to foreclose on the property. So there could be additional expenses and other liens, but in this case, speaking specifically to the mortgage, that typically would not be the case. So with that said, understand that most mortgage lenders is why they request that taxes are included in the escrow of the payment. And so 99.9% of the lenders are going to require that your tax bill be included in the escrow, which means that then that tax bill would get sent directly to them. And so they want to know that information because it protects their interest. So if they receive that tax bill and find out that you're not current or that you haven't paid, then they can make proper movements to be able to protect their interest. So in most cases, if it's included in the mortgage, then that tax money is escrowed. That annual bill is just a reminder to them to go ahead and pay those taxes out of your escrow. But if you have a mortgage and not required to have an escrow, then that would expose the lender. And in some cases, we've seen that lenders actually will go and they'll purchase the certificate at the tax sale to, again, protect their interest. So if the taxes are $10,000, but the borrower owes $200,000, like you said in your example, then it's in that lender's best interest to satisfy that tax situation so then they can protect their interest, which is the $200,000 that's owed to them.
Okay, so let's drill down a little bit more on a certificate. So who, an investor in this context, who would the investor be buying a certificate from?
Yeah, good question. So the investor would be buying the certificate from the local jurisdiction. So in most cases, it's either the finance office or some jurisdictions even have a tax office or a finance office. So when I say jurisdiction, what I'm saying is that each jurisdiction around the country, so Baltimore City is different than Baltimore County, which is different than Montgomery County, Howard County, Anne Arundel County, Charles County, Prince George's County. So they each have different rules as it relates to their tax sale process, and they all have different time periods. So we'll talk about, you know, what that means in terms of redemption periods and the like, but just know that each jurisdiction has its own set of rules. So when you ask about what is the tax certificate, first of all, you should know that the tax sale is an auction. So just like any other auction, it would, the right to pay that tax bill would go to the highest bidder. So what you'll get is you'll get a list, and in that list we'll have all the properties that qualify for that tax sale. So that list could be made available. If we're talking about Baltimore City, February is when the final notice goes out, and then that list is usually comes available sometime in May. And when that list becomes available, then they'll tell you exactly when that sale is going to happen. So let's say the sale is about to happen. You register as an investor online to be able to participate, and the first property comes up that you might be interested in, say on Howard Street. And so then you will have an opportunity to bid against other investors for the right to pay that property bill. If you are the highest bidder, then you would earn the right to pay that property bill, and you pay that to the finance office. In exchange for paying that bill, the finance office will give you what we call a tax certificate. So the tax certificate says that you, at that point, have an equitable interest in the property. You don't own the property. You have an equitable interest, meaning that you put forth some dollars to be able to satisfy that lien. And so with that tax certificate, it comes with some privileges. So some of the privilege is that you will get your money back, right? That tax, so it's saying clearly, this homeowner previously owed the city, and that homeowner did not pay the tax bill. So because they didn't pay the tax bill, the property went in a pool for a tax sale. At that tax sale, this investor has now won what we call the certificate and the right to pay that tax bill. And so with that, the homeowner now not only owes that investor for that tax bill, but he also owes him interest that's earned on the money from the time that the tax bill was paid until the time that it's redeemed, meaning until the time that the owner satisfies the outstanding bill.
Now, when you say there's a interest on that, the interest is different or can be different depending on which jurisdiction or what area, like Baltimore City may be different than Baltimore County, maybe different than D.C., et cetera, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So that's the beautiful thing about the tax sale as a strategy is that there is different returns on investment, right? So you could look for the jurisdictions that pay the highest return on investment. And the beautiful thing about this is most of them now are online auctions. And so they'll do a pretty good job giving you the inventory list. And the inventory list is going to tell you what district the property's in. It'll give you a parcel ID number. They'll also tell you what the cash value is. So remember, because these properties are assessed, that the jurisdiction has an idea of what that value might be on that property. And then they'll tell you what the outstanding taxes are. And then at that time, then you can actually bid on the property. Once you get winner, then it will be posted on that website of the not the name of the winner, the bid winner, but that bidder's number. Everybody's assigned a number once you register to come into the auction.
Okay. Now, based off that difference of interest and maybe even the inventory that each jurisdiction may have, do you have a favorite yourself of which jurisdiction you look to purchase tax sale properties from?
Yeah, no, so that's a good question, King. And so what I'd like to do now is kind of dispel a nomer, right, which is that once you buy that property tax certificate, then you actually own the property. So that's not the case. But I will say that the reason why I want to make that clarification is because potentially, if your goal is to acquire the property and not so much the interest that's paid on it, because you'll get the interest anyway, but if your goal is to, say, hope that the homeowner doesn't satisfy the tax bill and then you're actually able to take possession of the property, then you might be wanting to think about where that property might be located and then what that might do for your overall portfolio. So there's a couple different criteria in how you might want to select properties to bid on. And it may not just be the jurisdiction that has the highest interest or return. It may also be, you know, the jurisdiction that may have the greatest upside if you were successful in acquiring that property.
So it's definitely a little more thought that needs to be put into the tax sale strategy as opposed to I'm just going to choose the jurisdiction with the highest interest. Because I've heard folks just really choose that as their method for why they purchase and maybe Baltimore City as opposed to D.C. is for that reason.
Yeah, and just to be clear, King, on national averages, about 92% of the properties, the homeowner redeems them, meaning that the homeowner does satisfy the tax bill. So I say that because that's important because there's a lot of people that come to me and say, hey, I want to get involved in tax sales. And I say, great. The first question I ask them is why? And most of them say, hey, I think that's a great way to buy properties. And so I caution them at that point to say, hey, listen, most often you're not going to get the property, right? Statistics says that only, you know, less than one out of every 10 properties actually the investor actually gets the property. And there's a lot of reasons for that. The first and foremost is there is a redemption period. So I said earlier that just because you secure the certificate at auction doesn't mean that you own the property. So there's what we call the redemption period where that the root word of the redemption is redeem, where the homeowner has a time period in which they can redeem their right to that bill that the investor paid for them. So by them paying for that and also the interest and also whatever fees that are associated with, then they get back in good standings and the good graces, and they then take their rightful position. So I always caution investors to say it's a great strategy if we're talking about, you know, minimizing your risk because it's almost guaranteed that you're going to get a return on investment, which is going to be higher than an average savings account or something like that. So it's a great, it's a stable investment. It's a safe investment. The worst case scenario is that you not get the interest back on the money, but you actually get the property, which is always a great thing because as a savvy investor, you're going to pay far less for to satisfy the tax bill than what you probably would as it relates to the what the house is actually worth, which is why the jurisdiction is going to give you the value of the property in that inventory list before you even bid so that you can consider all these things when you're deciding which property you want to bid and how high you want to bid based on that value and hope that if that's your strategy, that property might return to you.
So, again, just for a clarification standpoint, if I'm just getting started in a tax sale investor business and my first question coming to someone like you is how do I get access to that list or where do I find properties that are being auctioned off on a tax sale?
Okay, great, yes. Yep. So if, say, it depends on what jurisdiction you're in, but say if you're in Baltimore City, for instance, so Baltimore City has a website, baltimorecity.gov, and then on that site you would just click on tax information and they will tell you what the schedule is for the tax sales. They'll give you some rules as it relates to the tax sale. They'll tell you how they market and advertise, where you can find the various notices and things that they send out. But most often they're going to have an inventory list and it's going to have all the properties. And again, it depends on how many of them haven't paid their bill, which determine how big that list is. And then, of course, if the homeowner satisfies that tax bill prior to auction, then it will come off the list. But to answer your question, you can pretty much Google tax sale followed by any jurisdiction that you're interested in, and you're going to find some government page that's going to give you the rules and regulations in that jurisdiction for those tax sales.
Okay. Now, I know you've already mentioned you've already answered some of this question previously, but I just want to see if there's anything else around it that you may not have covered. What would you say are some of the pros about buying tax sales or using tax sales as an investment strategy to acquire properties?
No, so yeah, so I think it's a good investment strategy. If the goal is to acquire the property, there's probably some other processes that you would probably be more successful in, or let's just say the odds would be better on your side if your end goal is to acquire the property. But if you want to invest, with a return on investment with minimal risk, then tax sales is an excellent way to do that. And in the worst case scenario for the owner, and the best case scenario for you, is there is a chance that you actually might be able to acquire the property. But as I said, you know, you're working on a 92 percentile that the owners in most cases pay and redeem it. But nonetheless, if we're talking about portfolio and we're talking about a lot of different investment processes and approaches, this can definitely be one that minimizes the risk. The capital outlay is a lot less than it would be if you were making an acquisition on the purchase of a property, right? So that's a good news. So you can actually buy, you know, to improve your odds, you can actually buy several or be involved in several tax sales, several tax auctions in multiple jurisdictions, and be able to make a return on your investment. So, yes, I think it's a great strategy.
Okay. And so let's flip the question around, and let's look at some of the – and you've already covered some of this as well, let's see there or any others. What are the cons of using tax sales as an investment strategy, things that we should be mindful of?
Yep. So I think one of the things is, you know, as we just said, is that it's a high likelihood that you're not going to acquire the property through the tax sale. But nonetheless, it's still a great investment process, and there is a chance. I mean, we know clients that have been successful in securing properties through tax sales, so I don't want to make it sound like it's impossible. So that is definitely an option. So I would say that, yes, that it is solid. One of the drawbacks could be potentially it could be additional liens on the property that you may not know of if you're not doing a title search. So one of the things you may want to do if you are successful in getting the certificate is you run a title search to see if there are any additional liens, whether it's from the water company or mechanic liens or other people who have a claim to the property. And when I say lien, I mean that someone has a legal stance where they have attached to the title, which means they have to be satisfied in some way. It's a monetary satisfaction that has to happen for that title to be transferred. So there could be additional liens. I remember I had a client who, you know, most often they come to you after they make decisions and get themselves in a little bit of water, right? So
right.
I had a client that came to me, and they were just so proud of what they did. And they came and said, hey, you know, I bought a property at auction this morning, and I wanted to come by and let you know. And I said, okay. And so he had a tax certificate, right? I said, okay, that's great. So I explained to him what he actually had, and he said, oh. And I said, well, you know, he said, well, what would you do after you get the certificate? I said, well, first thing I would do is run a title search to see if there's any liens on the property. And lo and behold, we found out that there was a lien on the property. Now, this was, and this can happen, you can have a personal debt that can transfer to your property. And so in this case, it was the IRS. And so the homeowner had a debt with the IRS. Somewhere I think it was about $50,000 or so. And because of that, it was a cloud on the title, right? Meaning that the title could not transfer clearly. So he said, oh my gosh, what did I do? And so we, you know, had made some recommendations for him to talk to some title attorneys that we work with. And at the end, he was successful in being able to negotiate the tax debt, down where it actually made sense for him to stay in the deal, and ultimately he did acquire the property through foreclosure, and it was successful. And so that's why I say, you know, one of the first things you want to do is get that title search to see who else is involved and or who can make it difficult for you to actually, you know, fulfill your goal if your goal is to acquire the property.
Now, correct me if I'm mistaken, but doesn't Baltimore City even add water bills to the tax bill? Because I've seen some properties on that Baltimore.gov website that you mentioned earlier, and I've seen where the property is only worth, it's a shell, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's only probably at best worth about $5,000 or $10,000. But the city is saying that the bid price is $70,000, you know, or they have some enormous number that it seems like it's who would even redeem that at that price? Because it's definitely farly exceeds the market value of the property.
Yeah, so that's definitely possible. I don't know with any certainty if Baltimore, you know, if that's a process of theirs, if they add liens in the tax sale. But, yeah, that's why I said you would definitely want to research that, get the tax, get the title search to know exactly what is the situation with that.
Okay, now that brings up another question. And you know, for me, some of the cons about buying properties online is that you can't see in them. You know, you don't really have a chance to, now, unless someone's going to take pictures of the property and, you know, post pictures. But most online auctions, I haven't seen that, you know. So my question would be, how would a person gain access to a property that's on a tax sale to kind of get an idea of what they're going to be getting, you know, so they can understand, is it in any kind of condition? Do I, am I having to replace the kitchen, upgrade anything? You know, what am I getting? What am I getting myself involved with? Is there any way to kind of get that information up front prior to the bid?
Yeah, so unfortunately not. Unfortunately, a tax sale is one that the owner hasn't necessarily willingly or unwillingly have to participate in, right? Meaning that the owner doesn't have to make his property available for anyone to see it and view it because it's on a tax sale list,
right?
So he's probably even
right.
more less likely to do that. But there probably is some things that you can do to do some recon, right? You could use kind of Zillow and Redfin is pretty good in a sense where if the property has ever been listed in the past, right? So if it's ever been on the market for sale, then potentially there might be some pictures out there where you might be able to see the floor plan and the layout. Now, what are the conditions today? We're not going to know. But that is one way to maybe garner some information. You could potentially go to the tax sale. Potentially go to the public records. So on the tax sale inventory sheet, it's going to tell you what the value is, but it's not going to tell you the breakdown in terms of the number of bedrooms, the number of baths, is it two levels, is it three levels, is it a finished basement. But if you were to go to the public tax record, on the tax record, in most cases, it will tell you the number of bedrooms and if there was any renovations that were done that needed permits and that homeowner had filed for permits, then oftentimes that become attached to the public record as improvements. And so you could maybe look at these different resources that's out there to give you an idea. You could always do a drive-by. You could look to see, you know, if once you understand the floor plan, there might be a similar property that might be on the market on that block in that neighborhood with a similar floor plan that now you can go in and view and take a look. Again, this doesn't speak to the condition of the property. It's only giving you ancillary, anecdotal information for you to at least get a sense of what it is that you're entering. But to answer your question, no, there won't be any open houses or anything like that scheduled for anyone to get access.
Now, those are some great strategies that you just pretty much defined and suggested. And I think that that can definitely be very helpful in helping people get, at least get an understanding of how to approach investing tax sales when you can't see the property. And like you said, the obvious thing being it's a homeowner who doesn't even want the house to be sold. So they're not going
right.
to welcome you into their home so you can walk through and take pictures and assess the damage. So
that's true.
With that being said, is there anything else you would suggest that as far as strategies that that investors can look at to prepare themselves for that part of the process? Anything else that you may find to be helpful from your years of experience in dealing with investors and purchasing tax sale properties?
Yeah, so I think, you know, some of the things I just mentioned in terms of Google, you know, looking at the tax bill, you know, Zillow, Redfin, you'd be amazed at how much information is online. I mean, and I would challenge you to just go and Google your own property address, right? You would be so surprised at how much information is online. And if that property has been listed in the past, I think that's a great way to see interior. Or if it's been listed on the past, oftentimes publicly, you can find who was the listing agent of that property. You know, again, this is business. You have to be creative. So reach out to that previous listing agent. Hey, you know, there's a property I have of interest. I see that you listed the property about 4 years ago. You know, is there anything you can tell me about the property? Particularly, I'm thinking about the condition of the property. How was it when the property was sold? Do you remember any improvements that was done when the property was sold? Did it have updated bathrooms? Did it have updated kitchens? You know, what was the ceiling height? You know, and kind of maybe you can start to get a picture. At least you can timestamp, right? You can say, hey, if that property was sold 4 years ago and this agent has given me this information, then at least I have an idea of what it looked like 4 years ago, and maybe then it might be in pretty good condition given all the upgrades that was done prior to his listing of the property.
Now, will the agents actually charge money for the information?
No. I think what you have to think about is, you know, agents are in business, right? So if you say, hey, I'm an investor, and in this case, I'm looking at a tax sale, but I tell you what, if I am successful in getting the property, there's a great chance that I would want to maybe renovate the property and resell it. Hey, if you'd be interested in potentially having a conversation with me about listing that property for me, I'd love to engage you to see if I can get some information from you to help me make a better decision about this property. Or if you're thinking about keeping the property as a buy and hold, you know, by the way, Mr. Realtor, do you happen to do property management? Oh, by the way, I do. Okay, excellent. Well, you know, Mr. Realtor, I'm looking at this property, and if I'm successful in acquiring it, I'd like to rent that out, and maybe you can help me get a tenant. I'd love to work with you in that way, or if you could manage the property for me, because, you know, I got two jobs. I'm very busy. I'd love the idea of being an investor, but I don't have the time necessarily to manage the day-to-day operations. Is that something that you can assist me with? And so I think what you do is you look for a win-win situation where you're not just, you know, using someone and their professional and knowledge without understanding that, okay, this could be a win-win because there's going to be some additional services that I may need and would love to refer this person and let him know that, hey, this is a business conversation. I'm not just wasting your time here.
You know, I love those examples you gave because, you know, as a conscious capitalist, I'm a person who believes that you must always give value. You should always look for value, but at the same time, as a business person providing the services or the products, you should always give value. And what turns me off is when folks who are investors come into the business and they just want free information. They want everything free, 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 free. So they can use that information you gave them to help them make money. You know, and I'm like, why do you even have that mindset entering into this space? Now, of course, there's going to be some information that's free, but I believe that information that's free should come with work, i.e. Google, yes, doing some search, research, things like that. That's requiring your time, your efforts. But if you want to shortcut that process and get it from someone else who's already has done that, who's already invested the time and has an experience, then you should be looking to engage in a transaction that's a win-win, like you said earlier. So the question should not be, how do I save money? How do I get things for free? But how do I get the maximum value for the investment I'm going to make? I think that's a better question that people should really approach the situation with.
Absolutely.
Now, Do you have any case studies or examples you want to share? Some of the short sale, my apologies, but tax sales that you've been involved in from either acquisition standpoint, work with a client, or, you know, even on the back end, being the property manager.
Yep. So I'd love to do that. So if I could, I just want to, before I do that, I just want to walk through that foreclosure process really quickly, because I know we're coming up on our time, and I want to make sure that we give people the full cycle of, you know, it starts with that legal notice of people not paying the bill, and then how this thing may wind all the way through, because as I said earlier, there is a chance that you might actually get the property, but there is a legal process that you'd have to go through, and then I think that would lead us to the case study, right, an example of someone who went through that whole process. And so so as we said, think about tax sales as auctions. It's pools of property on people who haven't paid their tax bill. As an investor, you have a right to bid on that. If you are the winning bidder, the jurisdiction will award you what we call a certificate, a tax certificate. With that tax certificate, that guarantees that the owner of the property, if in fact that they do pay the bill, they're going to pay the bill, the money that you've invested, with a return on your investment. And then any administrative fees, they're responsible for that as well. And that's what we call redemption. That homeowner now redeems, and there's a time period that's set for that to happen. In the event that the homeowner does not redeem in that set time period, and again, each jurisdiction has its own, and I also say that that redemption period is going to vary in most jurisdictions based on if it's occupied or not. So if the property is occupied, typically there's a longer redemption period because the government wants to give the homeowners the due right as much time as they possibly can to be able to satisfy it. But then if it's a vacant property, then that time is usually shorter, right? So I think in Baltimore, it's usually 3 months you can start the process. Within 4 months, you can start the legal process if the property is vacant. I think it has to be 7 months if it's occupied. Or something in that range. But the point here is it's not redeemed. Homeowner doesn't pay the bill in that set period of time. Now that investor who has that certificate can now go to the court and file what we call foreclosure, right? Which saying that there is a debt that's owed against the property. I have the right to collect on that debt. That debt has not been paid. And because that debt has not been paid, I'm going to move to take possession of the property, which they rightfully, legally can do. And so that is a legal process in which they would file for foreclosure. That will come up on a docket at court, and it has to be a judge that actually has to review the certificate to make sure it's authentic, to make sure it was done correctly, to make sure the time period has expired as it relates to redemption period, and make sure that there's no other outstanding issues as it relates to anything that would preclude this investor from actually taking possession. And if that, all those things are satisfied, then the judge can actually award to the investor the order for foreclosure, and then that would actually give them the legal right to now move through the court to actually legally take possession of the property. Assuming that all that is well and done successfully, then that now transitions in terms of ownership to that investor. Now, if that property is occupied, as I said before, there's different time periods where if it's occupied or vacant, but if that property is occupied, then that investor has to go through an eviction process. So now that you've gotten the foreclosure, it says now you're the legal rightful owner of the property. But it doesn't mean necessarily then you can come and just kick the people out. There still has to be a process in place. So in most cases, there in most jurisdictions, it requires you to do an eviction where you actually go back to the court and say, hey, now I have ownership of this property. Here's my deed. You know, there's a legal process that happened. The judge gave the order. Title has now transferred into my name. I'm now the rightful owner of this property. These people are adversely in my property, meaning that they're there without my consent. and then there's an eviction process that started to now get those people removed and their possessions removed out of the property.
Okay.
So now you might say, well, how long will that take? It depends on the jurisdiction, right? In most jurisdictions, it won't happen sooner than 4 to 6 months. In most jurisdictions, the redemption period is going to be at least 90 days. And then, depending on if it's occupied or not, there could be additional time added to it. So it's very likely that it could take, you know, 8 months before you would actually be able to get in front of a judge.
8 months. Wow.
It could take 8 months. But keep in mind, you may have paid $5,000 outstanding tax bill, a property that's worth $250,000. Right. So time, you know, it's the unfortunate part because you can't just redeem it the next day. But in most cases, it's well worth the wait. And again, it's going to vary by jurisdiction. So in other jurisdictions, you very well might be able to move forward foreclosure in 3 months or 4 months. And then it just depends on how long the docket is before you can get in front of a judge.
Understood. Well, thank you definitely for adding that additional information. I'm glad you actually covered that because that was some important information to make sure that we got across to our listening audience. And you were going to mention, I know we're now pretty much 9 minutes left in the hour, but if you have a quick case study you can share with us, I think that would be helpful. And then we want to give, of course, give an opportunity to share your contact information and the fact that we're going to be having a course for this coming up, and we're going to be giving details for how folks can actually take the course from Mrs. Smith and learn more about how to really get started in tax sales. So without any further ado, Mrs. Smith, I don't want to take any more time away from your case study.
Yeah, so this is a funny story. Is we had a client who actually bought a tax sale. It was actually in D.C. She was actually an attorney, actually. Bought a lot. At tax sale. And, you know, she had mentioned to us when she bought the lot and she bought it really, she really paid for the certificate. It was really an investment, right? And she was hoping to get a return on investment and just the certificate. She, you know, she would have been just, you know, tickled pink if she got the property, but she really didn't expect to do it, to get the property actually. And so several months had passed, and we asked her, said, hey, whatever happened with that tax certificate? And she's like, you know, they never, it was never redeemed, so that I was never paid back my interest. And I said, okay. I said, so are you going to start the foreclosure process? She had just totally, had just so busy with life, wasn't even following the timelines, and had actually was omissed and didn't even realize that the redemption period had passed, and she actually could move forward with the foreclosure, and which she did, and we eventually listed the property for her, and it was great at the time because everyone was doing renovations, and she had ended up buying a property for about $2,000 that had a value of probably about $45,000. And it was a fairly small lot, but she, you know, those were great numbers. Invest $2,000 and made $45,000 in about a year.
Wow. You know,
so it doesn't always happen, but if it happens, and when it happens, it can be a very good thing.
Absolutely. So with all that being said, are you? Or does your brokerage provide consultancy around helping investors get started in tax services?
Oh, yeah, we absolutely can help them with that. You know, it's really key on knowing which jurisdictions and what the rules are. And I'll say that we're not lawyers. We're not attorneys. We don't hold ourselves out to be. But I do say that this is a legal process, and so we are able to advise and direct to, you know, things they should be considering if that is something they're interested in. And, yes, we can give them tons of information to make very knowledgeable decisions.
Okay. Now, with that being said, it's an excellent segue into why don't you please share your contact information with our listening audience as well.
Oh, absolutely. So they can get me on email at Andre dot, that's A-N-D-R-E dot Y-O-U-R-R-E-A-L-T-O-R at gmail.com. That's Andre dot your realtor at gmail.com. They can reach me on the phone at 240-317-9444. That's 240-317-9444. Or they can visit us online at thevelocitygroupllc.com. That's thevelocitygroupllc.com.
Excellent. Excellent. And, of course, this is the King with the Conscious Real Estate Investors Roundtable. You can get more information about the roundtable and what we're currently working on, even during the current pandemic virus, at www.consciousrt.com. And that's consciousrt.com. And also, this is an excellent segue, Mr. Smith, into the fact that we're going to be posting some online classes. With everyone being at home right now and during this pandemic, we realize, and to your point you were making earlier, that there has to be some real concrete, valuable real estate information that exists out there, and not just try to take people's money, trying to get over or putting out information that's outdated and is not really relevant or too broad for the jurisdiction that you may be currently in. So we're going to be talking about how to actually do tax sales in the Maryland, D.C., and Baltimore City areas, among other classes, how to get started in real estate investing, and pretty much how to go about even working with real estate professionals. I think that gets left out, or the assumption is made just because you know how to buy a property now because you have the money and you have the credit. You can move forth and buy a property, that you know how to manage contractors, that you understand how to manage the renovation process, that you know what to expect from that renovation process, how to order utilities and deal with order insurance for your properties, and then all the things that's involved with that. We want people to realize that that's information that you have to know. Now, are the classes going to be free? No, but we will be providing free information on our radio show that can kind of let you see that this is who we are dealing with, subject matter experts that know this information, and that you can now feel more confident with registering for the class. And then we're going to be directing you to a webinar that we're going to be posting next week, and you can get more detailed information about the classes during the webinar. So we definitely encourage individuals who are interested in moving forth and acquiring more properties or learning first learning more about real estate investing before you start buying properties. Get that knowledge, understand how to do research, understand how to go about building your team, getting a plan, all the things we're going to be laying out. We say those are the first steps. And the last thing I want to point out to you is that we're actually in the process now of raising capital for what we call the Conscious Fund. And then we're going to be raising $100 million. That's right, $100 million for the purpose of the Conscious Fund to allow us to purchase real estate, renovate real estate, and act as a bank, and we'll be able to finance the real estate deals for home buyers that we call stakeholders in our program, as well as provide finances, microloans, and other investment opportunities for folks in the DMV and the Baltimore areas. So we'll be looking forward to giving you more information on that on the future shows. But until then, continue to keep listening, continue to keep being engaged with us, continue to keep learning. And obviously, definitely continue to be more conscious and continue to follow all the CDC required guidelines of social distancing, face masking, and of course, staying home. Until next week, everybody continue to be more conscious. Thank you for listening.
King Street, DC Metropolitan News and Real Estate Information.